We should be on the beach in Marbella, but we're not, and it's just as hot. It's the Total Rugby League show here at Brig House, and joining me, he's back. We've rotated the squad, a bit like Justin Holbrook, yeah. And it's Mr. Martin Sadler's
here. I thought I'd better come back before you forgot who I was.
And Matthew Shaw is here as well. Welcome, everybody.
Bringing the strong boys out for the Challenge Cup semi-final.
Yeah,
very much following in the footsteps of Justin Holbrook.
That's right. So hello everybody and welcome to this week's Total Rugby League show. A Challenge Cup and 1895 Cup semi-final preview coming your way shortly. We'll also be catching up with Lorraine Marsden to walk us through the Women's Challenge Cup final this week. And we'll be joined by Andrew Fawn, owner of the West Wales Raiders, to talk about winning. Finally happened. But before that, it's to relegation we turn. 2 points separating the bottom five. Who needs the Super 8s, Matthew?
I know, it's funny, we were speaking about this morning.
We were.
It's, you know, one of the reasons the Super 8s wasn't particularly popular was because there was too much jeopardy for too many clubs.
Mm.
And the maximum, of course, the jeopardy was for was four clubs. Well, we're now in a position where we get rid of the Super 8s and five clubs are in jeopardy going into the final five rounds of the season.
Well, funnily enough, the old structure, the Super 8s, they split into the top and, yeah, and middle after 23 rounds, which actually is what we've just had. So if we were doing that, Huddersfield would be safe,
yeah,
and the other four teams, Wakefield, Leeds, Hull KR and London, would be in the middle eights, yeah, wouldn't they, in the qualifiers. So interesting stuff, really, but it just gets more exciting every week, this relegation battle, as more clubs get drawn into it.
I mean, the interesting thing is, the other thing that the middle eights brought you was the fact that a lot of head coaches could regroup, sort themselves out, and be safe in the knowledge that they've got four championship signs to deal with over the coming months.
Mm.
You haven't really got that anymore. It's a straightforward trapdoor, and you look everyone's
at,
looking at
and
it.
And you look at some of the run-ins, mainly Wakefield's. I mean, it is incredibly tough.
Mm.
You know, it's not, like you say, they don't have the luxury of maybe going to, in yesteryear, Sheffield, Batley or Halifax and thinking, oh, we're going to get a win there. They can't do that anymore. For Wakefield, we're on this awful run of form. Their next game is Saints away.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? The next game at Huddersfield is Huddersfield v Leeds. What a massive game that is. You know, what a big game for Leeds and Huddersfield.
Well, Huddersfield are safe if they win that, in my opinion.
Probably, yeah, probably. But if Leeds don't win it, they,
yeah,
gosh. And London's next game is, I think, at home against Salford, which is another winnable game, although Salford, I think, went down there and won easily not that long ago earlier in the season. It's another loop fixture. Yeah. But, you know, who would bet against London getting their own back on Salford?
We have got a weekend off from League Matters this weekend, so it is a chance for these clubs to sit back and regroup a bit.
It's a chance for them to recruit.
Yeah, I mean, who do you think would be the most worried at this stage? Is it Wakefield?
I don't think there's an answer to that question. I think they're all equally as worried.
Can I tell you one club that probably won't be worried? London Broncos.
Oh, London won't be worried.
London,
no.
Because no. Danny Ward doesn't seem to worry, does he? He just gets on with a job.
Well,
and,
you know, at the end of the day, it's easy for us to sit here and say, well, they've nothing to lose, because that's not true. They didn't come into the season with the mentality that everyone else did, well, they'll probably go down. They thought they could stay up, and they still think that. So the pressure is on for them. But what you can say is that there is a hell of a lot more on the line for Leeds, for Hull KR, for Huddersfield and for Wakefield, because they never ever foresaw themselves getting into this position where, because they all thought, and players at these clubs have accepted this and said this publicly, they've said it on back chat, they didn't expect London to compete.
No.
The problem is that this season, there's no point in making outlandish statements, isn't it? Because two games later, they've got back-to-back wins and everything's forgotten about.
Well, I've just said to you, if you know, we talk about Huddersfield potentially going down, I'm telling you, if they win against Leeds next week, that's them safe. Yeah, at the same time, if they lose...
Well, nearly safe. You know, yeah, nearly
I just,
safe.
I just look at it. If they were to win again...
London, get to 20.
London are the bottom team. London are still in a position now where they need to win two more games than Huddersfield.
Yes.
If Huddersfield were to win again, they'd have to win two more games than Huddersfield with four games left.
Six.
Yeah. After next... So
yeah,
that'd be a big ask.
Up at the top end of the table, and, well, it's... Obviously, St Helens have won it, the League Leaders' Shield, that is. Warrington and Hull probably going to be in the playoffs as well.
Mm.
then it's a bit more interesting, isn't it? The gap between fourth and seventh is just 2 points now, Matthew.
And Salford are flying at the minute. Salford seem to have found a little bit of consistency, which at this stage of the year, we all talk about it. If you can get that momentum at the right time, anything can happen.
Well, Wigan are flying as well, aren't they?
They are.
You know, Wigan,
they were very good on Thursday night.
Wigan always seem to be able to time their run at the right part of the season, you know, and Adrian Lamb said at the start that, you know, it was going to be a difficult first few weeks of the season for them, but as the weather improved, they'd start playing better rugby, and they have done, and they're now up in fourth, and I don't see them, you know, falling below that level, if I'm really honest. I think Wigan will be fourth. They could conceivably even catch Hull and make third, but I wouldn't have thought they would do. But, you know, it's then a battle for fifth between Castleford, Catalans and Salford.
I think what was impressive about Wigan on Thursday, we've been quite critical still of the brand of rugby they've played. You know, Adrian Lamb said they come in and play exciting rugby. I haven't really seen that, but on Thursday, they were launching the ball here, there and everywhere. They were scoring from inside their own 10. They were very good. And what impressed me with Wigan was that they attacked with their defence.
Mm.
They were so aggressive, so quick off the line. Led by Morgan Smithers, who every time I watch him convinces me more and more he will be a world-class forward. A world-class forward. He is an exceptional talent.
Who is going to get fifth, Martin? If we're assuming Wigan do get fourth.
Catalans are a strange side, aren't they? I'm just not sure whether they'll be able to grab that fifth spot. I suppose the favourites have to be Castleford at the moment because they are 2 points ahead of Salford. But the interesting thing is that Salford have got the best points difference. So if Salford win one more game than Castleford, the odds are that they'll finish ahead of them. And I wouldn't put it past them. But as I say, their next game is at London, which is a really crucial game for both sides. I mean, there are so many crucial games, aren't there, now, for both sides. Mm. You know, this league structure this year is actually working so well as it happens. Probably better than people thought it would do, really. But, you know, it's hard to pick out a game where there's nothing at stake.
I was always critical of... I like the Super 8s, but I did say at the time, I didn't really have any objection with the league structure that was being brought in. It was the timing of it. No, deciding it in September, effectively.
Mm.
But it has provided us everything that we want in all three divisions, for that matter.
Absolutely.
Look at the Championship. Thrilling. I would say probably now the playoffs looks like it's done.
Yeah, I think so.
But League One's just ridiculous.
Mm.
It's been... People talk this game down a lot. The biggest asset it has is the product on the field. This year has been one of the most interesting, compelling, unpredictable years of rugby I can ever remember.
I find myself hardly being able to wait for the weekend because there are so many great games being played. You know, ones that you don't get to watch or see, but just, you know, the games that you know are going on, and even just following them on Twitter at the weekend is just, you know, really exciting, in my view.
Well, this weekend, there are no league matches, unfortunately. Apart from in League One and Championship. But it is all about the Cup, really, this weekend. The Challenge Cup, firstly. And it's a triple header this Saturday in Bolton. We'll be joined by Lorraine later to discuss that women's final. But to the men's semi-finals first, shall we talk about... let's talk about Hull v Warrington first before we get to Matthew's bread and butter. What do you think about Warrington heading into this game? The form's not been...
They've dipped a bit, haven't they? They're still a very good side. They've still certainly got the potential to win it. I'm not sure whether they've got the potential to beat St Helens at Wembley if they do win it. But Hull are the most enigmatic side we've seen this season so far, I think. You know, so many great big wins, so many massive defeats, so unpredictable. We're not sure. I mean, I think Albert Kelly will be fit to play. Hull had a great win at Leeds, and of course the guy who kicked the winning goal was Mark Sneed. And Mark Sneed will be a crucial part of Saturday's game, because if he's on form, his kicking game is superb. He can really have a big influence on a game. If he's not on form, he can be very, very ordinary. So I suppose it, you know, depends on which Mark Sneed turns up.
I think it's an enormous game for Warrington. They had last year where Steve Price came in, did a great job, got them to two finals after a very poor year the year before. They've invested a lot of money into that squad now, and into him, a lot into the infrastructure, a lot into the off-field. And what they've done off the field this year has been fantastic. But eventually, trophies have to come, silverware has to come. I think if Warrington weren't to make a final this year, it would be a deterioration on last year. And I think if they weren't to win a trophy, it would only see them stagnant after a lot of money. So I think they need to, win this game. And I think the man, inevitably, who will be the key, is the man they paid the big bucks for, and that's Blake Austin. If it is his time, he's done well this year. He's played well. This is the moment when he has to step up and win them. What is their biggest game of the season?
He has played well,
so
but
far?
I don't think he's played as well in the last few games as he was doing earlier in the season.
Is that more to do with Blake Austin or more to do with the opposition?
I think the opposition do learn a little. Obviously, as time goes on, the opposition study players like Blake and think very hard about how to counter him. And maybe that's been what's happening. I've not seen quite enough of him to be able to make that judgment on whether it's a loss of form by him or other teams upping their game.
I would counter that and say Blake Austin's form has dipped as a result of Stephen Ratchford not being on the pitch.
That's certainly an argument.
He is the ultimate decoy for a running halfback, Stephen Ratchford, because he provides so many threats. And when you've not got someone who transitions so well into a line who can run at the line himself as well as Ratchford, it makes it a little bit easier to mark Austin out of a game. So I think the quicker that Stephen Ratchford's back on the field for Warrington, the quicker we'll see the very, very best out of Blake Austin.
I mean, Matthew's right in what he was saying a couple of moments ago. The pressure is on Warrington here, isn't it, really, considering not the expectation, but based upon what happened last season?
Well, I think there's pressure on every... You know, Challenge Cup semi-final is a pressure game, you know, because both sides are so near yet so far from Wembley. So, you know, there will be pressure on Hull as well, because Hull are, in a sense, in the same position as Warrington. They've spent quite a lot of money on players in the last two or three years. They had great success at Wembley in, 2 years, winning the game in successive years. But they want to win trophies as well. Hull are a big city club. They've got big support. They'll take a lot of support to Bolton this Saturday. Their fans expect to win things just as much as the Warrington fans do.
I think the pressure is a bit different on Hull. This is a squad that will be breaking up at the end of the year. It's had its cycle. It's at the end of that cycle. And they will part ways, a big chunk of that squad. I think the pressure on them is to have one last hurrah. And what that is, it's pressure from yourself and from your teammates to deliver that last big performance. And I think that's why Hull, in my opinion, have maybe struggled a little bit for consistency this year, because there is maybe a mentality like that, doing it for themselves, but then doing that week in, week out can be hard. But I expect them in these one-off games to show up.
Let me just, though... Yeah, well, I think they will show up, and I think Hull will be very competitive. Let me just pick out one battle on the field that I think is going to be really fascinating. Probably the most fascinating battle of the whole weekend. Jake Connor and Blake Austin. Jake Connor, you know, potentially England or Great Britain standoff, you know, has played really well when he's played for England in that position. Blake Austin, obviously the man who's threatening his hold on that position, you know. I think Jake Connor will very much want to rise to this occasion and show Blake Austin, you know, play better than Blake Austin, put it that way. So what a treat for the fans that's going to be, you know, seeing those two characters in opposition to each other.
They are two players, probably in my opinion, the top two players that I would pay money to watch just because they are playing.
I like to say the way you say you would pay money to watch. What you mean is you probably wouldn't do, really.
No, but I would. No, you know what I mean. You know,
yeah,
what I'm,
of course.
If,
yeah.
If I unfortunately lost my media accreditation, yeah, they would be two players that
you'd
would be right
see.
At the top of my list that I would pay to see. Yeah. Especially, I mean,
Connor. True for me as well. I love watching Jake Connor.
Jake Connor's my favourite player to watch. I'm not saying he's the best player. That's a very subjective opinion. But
well, I love watching Blake Austin. Yeah. I love both these guys.
Speaking of subjective opinions, let's nail our calls to the master. Who do you think's going to win this one? Martin?
I'm just tempted to go for Hull, but, you know, just by... It could be Hull winning by an odd number of points. And that means Marks need landing a late field goal to win it for them. It could be as close as that, couldn't it?
I'm going to go with Hull because they have individuals in that team that have won huge games, that have individually put in their best performances of their career and Marks need in the big games. I look through that Warrington team and there are players that have had a lot of success in their careers. But have they ever stepped up in the biggest games? Have they been the match winners? I don't think there's as many of them in the Warrington team right now as there are in the Hull team. And of course, Warrington could prove me wrong. Someone could become that match winner. But I just look at O'Connor. I look at Mark Snead. I'm not Mark Snead's biggest fan. I rate him, but I don't think he's the world-class player some people make him out to
be. He does tend to raise his game for big games.
He's a two-times
Absolutely, as we saw at Wembley. So for me, I'm
edging with Hull.
Well, you're both wrong, actually. Rugby League will be the winner on Saturday. 2 o'clock kick-off, that one, live on television on the BBC.
My favourite cliche.
Thank you very much. I've got a bag full of them, Martin. You won't believe it. Yeah. But then that's followed by Halifax versus St Helens.
I don't think this will be as hard to predict, because clearly Halifax are going to win this game.
It'd be interesting to know who Halifax want, who Simon Grix wants in the final between Hull and Warrington. But Halifax against St Helens. We'll come to St Helens first. They've rotated the squad, obviously. Kicked off royally on Twitter and Facebook and social media and the like in the week about St Helens resting players, but they're entitled to, aren't they, against London?
You're just in Holbrook. You've just played Warrington, Hull FC and Wigan, the top three teams in the league. You then have London away on a 4G pitch the week before a Challenge Cup semi-final. The Challenge Cup semi-final is the first game in a long, long time this season that is a must-win game for St Helens. They didn't have to beat Warrington. They didn't have to beat Hull. They didn't have to beat Wigan. They didn't have to beat London. They have to beat Halifax. Forget it's Halifax. Yeah. Forget it's the part-time team who are eighth in the championship. They have to win that game. So what do you do as a coach? You make sure that your team is in the best position possible to win that game. And if that meant resting players against London, so be it. That's his choice.
It's really interesting you say that, because actually St Helens now only face four more must-win games this season. Mm-hmm. There's that one, there's the Challenge Cup final, there's the first game in the playoffs.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves, man. They're not in the Challenge Cup final.
And there's the grand final. You know, four games. The league games now for them just don't matter that much because they're so far ahead. You know, they've got money in the bank, in other words. Yeah. And, you know, they can spend that money as they wish. They can give run-outs to whoever they want. It's their privilege, you know, they're not struggling in any conceivable way. So, you know, Justin Holbrook has earned the right to select whoever he wants. The really interesting thing about Justin Holbrook, in my view, though, is, you know, is he going to be the Saints coach next year? And is he going to be distracted by all this talk of being linked with NRL clubs?
Is it unfortunate that that's not been resolved yet, given that St Helens are about to enter, a crucial handful of games left of the
season? I don't know if unfortunate is the right word, because I think if he wanted it sorted out, it could have been sorted out. He could have signed the contract, couldn't he?
Well, he obviously wants to head back to Australia at some point.
That's my take on it.
He obviously wants an NRL job.
If he knew that he wanted to stay at St Helens next season, he'd have signed a contract by now. So I think if an NRL gig's coming up, he's going. That's my take on the matter. I don't think Justin Holbrook will let that at all distract the players, distract himself. He is a very, very professional bloke. And he just won't. It's just
won't distract the players.
No, I don't think so.
Well, players like to have some certainty about who the coach is going to be next season, don't they? And particularly if they're signing new contracts.
I think the reality.
So it could be awkward. But,
the reality,
you know,
for the players, though. Look, this, in my opinion, is the best team Super League has seen in at least 10 years. I can't think of any side that's been better than that. I know Leeds won the treble. I think they're better than that Leeds side that won the treble. I really do. But
they've got to show it, haven't they? They've got to show
but
it.
But they have to solidify that by winning a trophy. So forget the coach is irrelevant. For them as individuals and them as a bunch of players, that is their motivation, to cement themselves as one of the great teams of this era by winning at least one trophy. If they don't do that, Tommy Makinson, Mark Percival, all exceptional players, they won't be remembered.
They'll be remembered as also-rans, unfortunately.
Yeah, a bit like that Castleford team. And look, Tommy Makinson's won a grand final, I'm pretty sure, in 2014. But
he's won the Golden Boot.
Yeah, he has. But, look at that Castleford team.
Mm.
That Castleford team was exceptional, but it won't go down as one of the greats because it didn't win anything.
What about Halifax, then?
Halifax, in my opinion...
What's the latest on Scott Morrell?
Yeah, that's...
Listen... Scott Morrell could still be in need of a neck brace and a Zimmer frame. He will be on the pitch.
I thought your tweet was very graphic, by the way, about the stuff that could happen to Scott before he'd stop getting on the pitch. It was a bit graphic.
He could require a Zimmer frame to get on that pitch. He will play on Saturday. There's no way, absolutely no way, he will not play. He's got whiplash. Scott Morrell's played with a hell of a lot worse. He'll be on the pitch.
Obviously, we know about the task that's in front of Simon Grix and his squad here, but in the history of rugby league, if Halifax were to do this, and it is a big if, but if they were to do this, where would this rank on the biggest upsets in the game's history?
Oh, I think it would be right at the top. I mean, the biggest Challenge Cup shock in history... was probably, certainly in Challenge Cup finals, was Sheffield beating Wigan in 1998. But I think this would be far bigger because, Sheffield at the time were a Super League side. Mm. So, it was a Super League side beating another Super League side. This would be a Championship side beating the team that Matthew has just said is the best team we've seen for 10 years. I probably agree with that. So, in terms of seismic shocks... I would say, 1,000-1 on St Helens, 1,000-1 against Halifax is probably about right.
It wouldn't go down as the biggest, I don't think, because of Sheffield Wigan, because it was in a final, as Martin says. But in terms of a one-off shock, it would be the biggest. Nothing would surpass that.
And as a Halifax supporter, Matthew, on the sly.
Mm-hmm. I do keep it quiet.
Yeah, you do keep it on the download, don't you?
So thanks for exposing it.
It's okay. Is it possible?
No.
Well, thanks for joining us,
Matthew. No, it's not. Look, you've got to be realistic. There isn't one player in that Halifax team who would get anywhere close to the Saints team.
Some of all the parts, though.
Of course, but they haven't really performed like that, have they? If you asked me last year, 12 months ago, I'd probably go, if they play at the very best and Saints have an off day. But facts aren't that team anymore. Facts aren't the team they were 12 months ago. You've got to remember, this is a team, forget it's Halifax and they've had all these great underdog stories. This year they're in the bottom half of the Championship. They've just drawn with Dewsbury. Mm. This isn't the team nearly beat Toronto.
Isn't there some romance in the back of your mind where it goes, they must be storing something up here?
Well, you would think so, wouldn't you? But Ben, I mean, you're a football man.
I am.
What's the biggest shock in football that you can remember? Hereford beating Newcastle many years ago.
Wrexham beating Arsenal, was it?
Town beating Man City.
In Scotland, didn't Berwick Rangers once beat Rangers or something?
Yes.
That was, probably...
I can remember United getting beat by York once in the League Cup. That was fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it does happen in football, but I think...
But football's a different sport. The thing you can guarantee in rugby league is that the best side normally wins. In soccer, the best side sometimes doesn't always win. And that's what makes soccer such a great spectator sport, actually. Because it's a bit more unpredictable. And that's a great thing for the fans.
Look, I think for Halifax, what they have to do is make sure that they perform at their top. And if they do that, that's all they can ask for. If they get beat on skill, fair enough. You expect that. What would be disappointing is if they got beat on energy, enthusiasm, passion. That would be disappointing. If they get beat just purely because Saints are too skillful for them, then fair enough. What more can they ask?
Oh, absolutely.
I think the reality is, look, I spoke to a lot of Halifax fans, and people within the club. The general consensus is that if they lose by less than 50, that would be a credible performance. That's the size of what we're asking them to do.
I wonder how many fans will hang over from the first game to watch Halifax and Saints.
I wonder
who they'll be cheering on as well.
I think a lot will stay for 10 minutes. Yeah. I guess it depends how the pattern of play goes. You know, if Facts can keep it a contest in the first half and maybe only be 8, 10, 12 points behind, I think some might stay, but it's hard to imagine that happening. You think they might be 8, 10, 12 points behind after 6 minutes, don't you?
It'll be well worth walking backwards to Horwich Parkway train station, that's for sure, if it was a Hull or Warrington fan, just to keep me here on the stadium.
But, you know, Halifax are, for me, and I'm a bit biased, I know that, I think Halifax are already the winners of this year's Challenge Cup in terms of the finances. Mm. It's worth about 120 grand for a part-time club. That's astronomical. Their fans haven't had a day out in a Challenge Cup like this since 1988. You know, it's a generation. People haven't seen this before. The town is buzzing. The town is absolutely buzzing. It's rare that the sport, either of the sporting teams, get hold of the town. But
the tragedy is that Halifax used to be such a massive rugby league town, didn't it?
Yeah.
You know, in the old days, you go back to 1954 when they played in, I think, the Championship final and the Challenge Cup final. They were, you know, had that massive crowd at Odsell Stadium, over 100,000 people. Mm. You know, and it's a shame in a way that splitting the competition into, you know, two divisions or now three divisions has consigned some clubs to a more minor role than they used to have.
I think, unfortunately, what's happened, and Halifax aren't the only club that you can criticise for this, is the marketing and their involvement in the community just isn't satisfactory.
The other thing that's affected them is that, you know, since David Brooks' departure, they've not had a benefactor who will, you know, finance them to be a top club. You know, unlike, not very far away, Huddersfield have had Ken
Davey. This is the thing, you know, you look at Halifax as a club and what they have got in place. If they had a money man, there'd be nothing stopping them going to. They've got a ground that is Super League standard.
Absolutely, yes.
You know?
I love the share. I think it's a terrific ground.
They've got that. There is a support base out there. It's a dormant support base, predominantly. But there is an appetite there, because it's been proven in the past that from all they got, what, average about 8,500-ish, you know? Even if they could get half of that now, that'd be great at the moment. They've got things to do. Hopefully this run will generate a bit of interest, generate a bit of a profile for them, and those old dormant supporters maybe think, reminisce back to those old days of 87, 88 when they got to Wembley and think, you know what, let's give it a go.
Well, I remember going to I went to the show last year, and the press section was full, so they opened up the old stand. I'm an arachnophobic, and my God.
Yes, oh, the Sturkic stand is
that was not good.
It's been taken over by anything but human, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that's why we were there. Anyway, both those matches then in the semi-finals will be on the BBC on Saturday afternoon, and a festival of rugby league, that's for sure. And it all kicks off, though, before that in the morning, and let's talk about that women's final now in the Challenge Cup. It's first against third. It's Castleford Tigers against the Leeds Rhinos, and here's League Express's very own Lorraine Marsden with her thoughts on this landmark fixture.
It's certainly going to have the excitement factor of either the semi-finals, and it could go either way. Castleford, no one's got the better of them yet this season. Leeds are up there. They've only lost to Castleford this season, and then Saints at the weekend. But whether you can ever read too much into the form directly before a final, who knows?
I mean, we might as well use the cliche now that form goes out the window for a cup final. But Castleford's form this season has been pretty exceptional to date. I mean, can Leeds stop them, do you think?
I think if there's ever a time that a team can stop them, it will be in a final. Both sides are relatively young. Leeds maybe have a touch more experience. Whether that counts for anything, we'll have to wait and see.
And obviously Leeds go into this game up until last weekend with only one defeat on the board. It's now two. You know, a game against St Helens could go one way or the other. What do Leeds have to do, do you think, to combat Castleford this weekend?
They have to start well. They have to handle the conditions well, because if it's as hot as it has been the last few days, then handling the conditions is going to be one of the key factors in playing through. They just need to try and repel Castleford as much as they can, because as well as great defensive play, Castleford have been fantastic in attack this season as well, and no one's found a way to stop that yet. Whether Leeds know something and have done some research that no one else has picked up on, again, Saturday will be the time to see.
I mean, the game kicks off on Saturday morning at Bolton Wanderers, but we should say this: the Challenge Shield finals take a place the day earlier at the Menhold Jungle. York City Knights currently sitting bottom of the table, but they're playing the Army, and that's quite a story in itself, really, for the Army to get this far in the competition.
It is, yeah. I mean, the Shield works. I think it's the second round after the Super League teams have entered that the losers from that round then go and play in the Shield, and the Army have pulled out some good results in this run, so they will probably fancy the chances. But for York, a win on Friday would really boost the confidence going into the second half of the league season, I think.
I was going to say, I mean, York's been they've not won a game this season all year, but the work that they're doing off the pitch to promote the women's game, both at the York City Knights and at the community clubs around the city, is pretty impressive stuff, and this would be a pat on the back.
Yeah, they are very, very active in promoting the game, and they had a similar sort of season last year and ended up picking up one win towards the end of the season, but they've never let that derail them, really, and they've kept pushing, they've kept going, they've stuck with largely the same players, same coach, and for them it is very much a work in progress.
But back to the Challenge Cup final. Obviously, this is going to be a well-attended game. It's a curtain raiser to the two men's semi-finals. I'm right in saying that there is an expectation that attendance record that Castleford set is probably going to tumble in this game, obviously, but also in other league games as the season progresses. I mean, the game is developing quite nicely.
So, yeah. Yeah, Castleford are doing great work to get supporters to their games, and it's working out for them. And then when they do get the supporters there, the team are going out and putting in the performances that will no doubt keep them coming back.
And finally, Lorraine, obviously there'll be a match review in League Express on Monday, but how much are you looking forward to this one?
It's definitely going to be the game of the season in terms of the women's game, and as I say, quite possibly even one of the games of the day on Saturday. And I would encourage anyone who's going over for the two semi-finals to get over there nice and early and catch at least some of that game, because if you're new to Women's Rugby League and haven't seen a game before, you'll be pleasantly surprised by the action on show.
So Lorraine Marsden there, and we should say that game, Castleford Tigers against Leeds Rhinos, I think is going to be on the BBC website.
Yes.
So
and it's good news that, and I tell you what, I think it'll be a good game. I don't watch as much of the Women's Super League as I'd like to do. I have watched the games in our league, and it's rightful and it's correct that it's getting this profile. I'm a big fan of the way that we're integrating not only Women's Super League but PDRL, LDRL into the mainstream. I think it's massive for the sport, and long term we just got to find a way now for me with the women's game to get it on Sky predominantly in the short term, and maybe beyond that.
Whether there's a window on Sundays, isn't there? I'd imagine in the schedule if we could find something. Just to let everyone know as well, we've got the window open here at League Express because it's boiling. So in case you're wondering if we've set up outside Piccadilly Circus or something, no, it's just the window's open. Before we get to Sunday's semi-finals in the 1895 Cup, let's just have a little championship round-up, and a big congratulations to Toronto, winners of the League Shield, following a close game at Widnes at the weekend.
Who booed Toronto when they won the league?
Some fans.
Some. Unfortunately, you end up tarring everyone with the same brush, and I apologise for that. But the mentality of some fans in this game is disgusting, and it's holding the game back.
We need a change of culture, don't we? Because there's too much of it. You know, it's I've written an article in Rugby League World, the new issue of Rugby League World, the August one that's just come out, you know, saying that we need to change the culture in terms of abuse towards referees. But actually, we need to change the culture in terms of fans abusing
each other.
Other, you know, players from other clubs and so on and so forth. It can get very nasty and unpleasant, can't it? It may only be a minority, even quite a small minority. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, if it goes unchecked, it's a cancer on the game. Now, the thing is that we've driven racial chanting out of the game some years ago. We drove homophobic chanting out of the game, and thank goodness we did. I think now we need to drive that chanting out of the game that targets the referee with violent, abusive language during the game. And the RFL and Super League ought to combine together with everybody involved in the game to do it.
I am sick to death of this blame culture that we have in rugby league. The York Bradford game, I'm sure we'll go on to York. Amazing result. Amazing result. And all we get is conspiracies that this and that happened. Oh, why do we do it? We play the victim. We play the victim so much.
To be fair, that's the same in every sport, really. Of course it is. Because of social media, everyone's got a voice.
But the bigger picture is we need a different culture. It starts with the clubs, to be honest. You know, I went to Toronto a few weeks ago, and the game day experience out there is unlike anything in this country. You go and it's a day out. You don't go to watch the match. I went to Wigan on Thursday. Get in the ground about half an hour before kickoff. Hardly anyone there. There was a very talented young singer just on a platform on the side of the pitch that sang a few songs. And that was it. That was the pre-match. I think the cheerleaders came on. That's not going to entice people into the ground. Go to Toronto. You've got all sorts going on before. You've got some medieval jousting going on. There's the beer garden. There's the bars around the ground. It's more like going for a day at the races rather than going to watch a match. You get in the ground. All the fans want to speak to you from Toronto. When Halifax scored, all the Toronto fans were singing it and banging their instruments to make more noise for it. It wouldn't happen. You can imagine doing that over here. It just wouldn't happen. But that's where we need to go. You know, the darts there. It's all pleasant, isn't it? You know, going to the races, going to the 2020 cricket. Yeah,
yeah.
It's jovial. It's a pleasant experience. And it's a serious issue. It's a very, very serious issue. We have to change the culture of our fans. We are together in this.
Yeah.
I mean, just to say, we have gone off on a big, massive tangent there. You could tell you two have been doing back chat this morning, can't you? Yeah. Blimey. Just to go back to the original point, congratulations to Toronto on winning the League Leaders' Shield. Still got to get promoted, though, and that's where I think Brian McDermott and Brian Noble will have both set of eyes on.
It's not a foregone conclusion, as I think some people think it might be. Don't think it's a formality. Lee have strengthened the squad. I'm told that they will strengthen again before August 9th. Featherstone look good. York, say what you want about York on paper, but they keep winning games.
Was it a big weekend with regards to the playoff race? Because there were wins for Featherstone, for
Lee.
There's
a gap now.
York are the amazing side, aren't they? Second place in the Championship after being promoted.
Yeah. There is a bit of a gap opened up now between those five sides and the rest of the division.
I don't see the five. I said last week I didn't see the five being any different to the five it is now, and I think it's probably solidified now.
Congratulations maybe as well to Swinton, who are 8 points to Barrow.
Brilliant.
Following a great win on Sunday, and we can't keep talking about how good Swinton
big game become, big game this weekend between Rochdale and Dewsbury. Certainly, I mean, Rochdale are down already, but Dewsbury
to get the point against Halifax. That could be crucial in the end of the season.
If Dewsbury win, they'll move above Widnes and Batley. You know, and that's really quite important.
Widnes aren't safe.
No. And then Hunslet and Whitehaven this weekend, big game for both sides. But, you know, every game you look at is a big game.
We'll come to League One in a second there, but we do need to talk about the AB Sundex semi-finals on Sunday. Two contrasting semi-finals, really. Levy, Widnes, whoever wins that, there's going to be a big army of either black and white or red and white going down to Wembley. In August, Sheffield v Batley. That's an intriguing game in itself, because Sheffield, we've already touched upon it, the Challenge Cup exploits of the late 90s. Batley have never been to Wembley, as I understand. So it's
that be wonderful to see Batley there? I mean, I'd love to see Sheffield there, because you know I used to work in Sheffield for 20 years, and I was there right at the start of the Sheffield Eagles back in the early 80s. So I'd love to see Sheffield there. And incidentally, the train lines are still running from Sheffield, but not from not down the East Coast main line. So it'd be pretty good in a way if they got there. But what a fairy story it would be if Batley got there. You know, first ever winners of the Challenge Cup in 1897. They won it the second year as well, and people often forget. But never have they enjoyed any great success since those early days. And, you know, to get Batley at Wembley would be just incredible, in
especially the year they've had. Obviously, Kevin Nicholas' wife Beverly passed away.
Yeah,
she was so influential at the club. I mean, what better gift?
Absolutely,
what better way to, you know, remember her than to get to Wembley? I think it almost seems written in the stars a little bit that Batley win that game, but maybe it's a bit premature to say that.
I mean, just to say, the 1895 Cup has obviously had its critics this season, but at this stage, this is where it's suddenly turned into a good idea, for these four clubs.
Well, you know, the whole how important, how big is the competition? I never buy into that, because for the clubs that walk out at Wembley, it's the biggest competition in.
Tell them it's not big.
Exactly. So it is a big competition. It needs to build a bit of a profile, there's no doubt about that. I'm still not convinced playing it after the final, whatever they want to say, is a good idea. In fact, I think it's a terrible idea, but it's irrelevant. They still get
that's
to walk
what's happening.
Out at
Wembley. Yeah, no point in criticising it now.
And for those clubs, you know, when was the last time League were at Wembley? The 80s?
Well,
70s?
I think regardless of whether it's Widnes or Lee, I think they'll take a lot of fans there.
Sure, yeah.
Sheffield and Batley, probably not quite as many. But, I mean, we need to start filling Wembley again, don't we? And, you know, if St Helens haven't been there since 2008, Warrington or Hull, I think they both take a lot there. So, hopefully, we're going to get up beyond 60, 70, perhaps
Martin,
even near
keep
to 80.
Keep, just, you keep Halifax
ignoring
haven't
Halifax. Been there since late
Halifax
80.
Haven't been since 88.
There we go.
Absolutely.
Tick. Everyone's covered. Everyone's happy. Andrew Fawn, owner of the West Wales Raiders, will be joining us in a second to talk about... winning. But we're going to start off talking about the top end of League One in our little League One roundup. Whitehaven were in action this past weekend, so an opportunity for Newcastle to close the gap, and that they did after a win against the Scholars. And the Scholars did bring it back, I think, to 16-all with 20 minutes left.
Weird,
so a very cagey game, but Newcastle Thunder winning quite comfortably in the end. Doncaster fired themselves into the middle of the playoff pack with a great 30-0 win at North Wales, who have been pulling up trees recently, while Workington leapfrogged over London to get themselves back into the playoffs with a win over Keighley.
Where's Aaron?
I know, Aaron. Where is Aaron? But there is only one story when it comes to League One this past weekend, and that was West Wales 44, Coventry 16. And on Monday, I caught up with the owner of the West Wales Raiders, Andrew Fawn, for his reaction to that win there.
Oh, yeah, it was great. You know, we've had almost 2 years of, building, and we've taken some heavy defeats over the last couple of years. And, you know, there's been a lot of people who stuck by you. So to see the players' faces, the supporters' faces, and to finally get a duck off our back was, it was a good day for the club. You know, it's only one win. We've still got a long way to go. There's still a lot of developing and still a lot of building to go. But, you know, it shows that the boys can play at this level, and they can, you know, they can win games. It's going to take a long time, as I said, but I'm just glad it's done now, and let's move on and see what we can do next.
I mean, one of the pivotal improvements that's been made has been the appointment of Kim Williams, it looks like, because the performances have been there and the scorelines have been, in a few occasions, a lot tighter than they were last season, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, Kim's been a great asset to the club. You know, when we spoke back in the middle of last year to Kim, one of the key things was that he wanted to know what the club's vision was, and, you know, and were we going to be another club that's just going to buy people in, or were we going to try and establish ourselves? And we seem to have both of our paths aligned. So when he came over, he basically stepped into what we were already trying to create. So we didn't have to change too much in the way we want. So, and that's that show now, you know, you see on social media, you know, some negative comments, but if you actually watch some of the games, you know, yeah, we've had some pastings, but some games we've lost, and that's just through being inexperienced rather than being unable to play. So, as guys start to get some more game time, I think we'll take some wins, you know, going forward. I have no doubt about that.
And I was going to say, I mean, that experience, when I speak to expansion clubs like the London Scholars or the Coventry Bears, they've got local-based players, but it is that experience that you need, really, to take that next step, to dip into that northern market and get those players in, whereas you're a bit younger than that, so these things take time.
Yeah, and I think you can grow your club in different ways. You know, you need to get that experience, and you need to start using some players from outside of your catchment area, especially as an expansion club. But the key thing is, you know, those players don't stick around for long, and it shows when you get people on dual reg, when you get people on loans, and once them players disappear again, then you're back to square one. So, you know, you don't want to give yourself a false hope, if that makes sense. So, you know, we haven't brought anybody in the part that hasn't stuck with us for the full season. So we're building a squad rather than just borrowing players ad hoc. So hopefully, you know, we can start to develop some young lads in our own neck of the woods, so we don't have to keep dipping in. But yeah, you're right. We're going to always have to get some experienced players from somewhere. That's just the nature of sport in general. But as long as it's not, you know, a big percentage of the squad, that's the key thing for us.
I mean, one thing we have to say is that, you know, when you're being beaten by three figures like you were last season, it could have been easy for you to go down that dual reg route and you know, spend big in a way. But you stuck to your principles of getting local-based players and developing those pathways with the community game in South Wales and the college system. And that is starting to bear fruit, isn't it? I mean, the squad that won on the weekend was predominantly a Welsh squad.
Yeah, you know, there's a number of things that when you keep bringing in dual reg and loan players, there's always a price attached to that. And with all sport, money dries up, or you're always searching for the next pound. So you've got to try and think of how you make yourself sustainable. And as I said, when you bring in players for the ad hoc game and you spend silly money, it's a very false front of what a club actually is. You need to try and build it from the ground up. There's a lot of youngsters being brought into the Welsh train-on squad. You know, whether they get game time is for John Keir to decide. But obviously, John Keir has got an eye on the future, because I think in Wales, historically, they've always had a squad, but there's been no depth in it. So now we've got these youngsters coming through. John Keir's given a lot more lads a lot more experience in the Wales camps. It's good to see that, you know, what's been put in place in Wales over the last couple of years, particularly over the last two or three. Some of those players are now starting to come out the other end, and we're starting to see some strength in depth potentially. And it's only going to help us in the long term, because there'll be more players interested in the sport, because they can see where some of their mates have got to, and they can see where, you know, what pathways look like.
Absolutely. And one of the players, I spoke to Morgan Evans last week, actually, because he was one of the West Wales players who've been selected in that training squad. You know, Welsh as they come, but he's come through the university system and he's playing for West Wales, and a man of the match performance at the weekend as well. And he spoke about John Keir and the fact that he does keep an eye on those on that South Wales system and the exciting talent that's coming through.
Yeah, well, Morgan's a great example of, you know, how the university system can pick up players who potentially weren't in the sport at a very young age. You know, there's lots of entry levels into the sport, and obviously being from Wales, you might not know what's out there until you're a bit older. So the university systems and the, you know, those type of pathways are fantastic for bringing these youngsters through. And, you know, he's been another player who, you know, he's been the end of some weekends with us, and he's stuck with us. He's a prime example of what can happen if you bring in homegrown talent through.
Absolutely. And that then brings us to the future. And we've touched upon briefly at the start, talking about the social media reaction. I mean, there was a pouring of goodwill after that result, which I think it goes to show you, you know, how many people were rooting for that first victory for West Wales. But there has been a question mark, and, you know, we do have to cover it. Results on the field and attendances, they don't happen overnight, but rugby league, it feels like a sport that might be in a bit of a hurry. So what's the future for West Wales, do you think? And how important is that steady as she goes, steady progress year on year for the club, do you feel?
I think there's a number of things. Firstly, you know, our presence highlights rugby league in Wales. That then obviously feeds into the national team. So we've got to make sure that our main goal is to get as many players into the system so that the international team is assisted to get stronger and stronger year in, year out. You're going to get players who are going to get snapped up and taken the Super League and Championship. That's inevitable. I think the key thing for us now is, now that we've sort of got the development stage sorted, as in the academies, the schools and the bits and pieces coming through, I know Kim's keen now to start pushing the first team on. But again, we've got to make sure that it's not just a flash in the pan overnight, and then, you know, who knows what happens to rugby league. It changes year on year. So there's lots of talk about funding and about broadcasting deals and all the other bits and pieces. So there's always, you know, something we've got to react to as we're going down the system. But I think we've got to be careful as well that we don't just spend money for the sake of spending money and then end up losing everything that we've developed up to now. So I think we've got a plan in place. I think we're not going to deviate too much from it unless we really have to. But yeah, it's key that we start being a bit more competitive and putting the brand on the pitch a bit better.
And that then leads me to probably my final question, Andrew, and that is the development of the community game there with the Southern Conference sides and the junior systems and the schools and the college system. How important is the South of Wales, do you feel, for the future of the sport of rugby league?
I think, you know, we've got a population of, you know, I don't even know the population. We're talking a million plus, probably a bit more, maybe in the whole of South Wales. There's an abundance of talent within sports in South Wales. And, you know, if we don't capitalise on those players, not just us, I think the game could lose quite a number of players that potentially could make a difference in the long term. You know, the likes of Regan Graces and Ben Flowers and those, there's loads of them out there. We just got to get them enticed into the sport. So I think if we don't capitalise on the South Wales and utilise the assets there, which are the players and the youngsters coming through, I think, you know, you could lose a very important market to the sport.
Andrew Fawn from the West Wales Raiders, big thank you for joining us. It's a great story, that, Martin, isn't it, really?
Brilliant, and I'm so pleased for them. It wasn't just that they got the win, but the margin of it was really surprising because, you know, Coventry didn't have a bad side by their standards out on the pitch. So congratulations to them, and I hope it's the first of many. Because, I don't care what anybody says, some people say that, you know, rugby league will never take hold in South Wales. I think that's a load of garbage, personally. I think rugby league can take hold anywhere. But, obviously, it helps if they've got a team that's reasonably successful. So, you know, they've got a great youth system in place in Wales at the moment. I hope some of those kids can come through and get involved with West Wales Raiders and see them gradually next season rise up the table.
The question I always ask there is, rugby league does feel like a sport in a bit of a hurry at the moment. Have West Wales got the time to do the good thing of steady as she goes progress every year?
I think time isn't the biggest thing. I think money is. I think I agree with Martin, rugby league can take hold anywhere. But I think for it to do that, it needs a significant investment behind wherever you put it. I think, unfortunately, West Wales don't have that. I don't think Coventry have that. And as a result of that, the growth takes a lot longer.
It does, but it might be, you know, based on better routes than it otherwise would be.
Potentially.
You know, that's the point.
This is where Newcastle Thunder comes in, because they've set the blueprint now for what's possible. But there is money in that.
But there's money behind that. That's the thing. You know, it's why is Toronto being successful?
But the fact is, there wasn't money for quite a long time. You know, when they revived themselves after that initial Gateshead Thunder season 1999, a group of people got together and reformed a club. And for many years, it had no money behind it whatsoever. And it really struggled along. And you wondered about the long-term viability. But then eventually somebody turned up who saw something in it, you know, the owner of Newcastle Falcons, and decided to bring them over to the Falcons and merge them into that operation. And I'm told now that, you know, Seymour Vardy, the owner of both clubs, actually believes that he's probably going to win Super League probably quicker than he wins the Aviva Premiership in Rugby Union. He thinks it's probably a less daunting task.
It's a great point.
I was going to say, though, that obviously there is investment at Newcastle and there is a community team there, but Yarm Wolves, Cramlington Rockets, Gateshead Storm, these are volunteer clubs.
Yeah, they are. They are. But it's no coincidence that everything's picked up since Thunder have pumped investment into it. I agree with your point. That, you know, if Thunder hadn't stuck around when the money wasn't there and done what they could do, then it probably would have never become what it was. That's an absolutely...
There'd be no such club as Newcastle Thunder. The thing that we've got to bear in mind is that in 2021 we're going to have the World Cup here. And most people, you know, I think the World Cup team are doing a very, very good job. And I think there's every chance it's going to be the greatest World Cup we've ever seen, hopefully with England winning it at the end. But even if England don't win it, it's going to be a great tournament. And I think it could be the, you know, the catalyst for rugby league's expansion throughout this country. And I'm hoping, I've been speaking to the RFL recently and I've suggested to them that they need to think now about how they're going to take advantage of what the World Cup brings. And one way of doing that is to announce that they're going to invite new clubs into the competition from 2022, into the League One as it then will be, you know, from places like Bristol, which was supposed to have a team but didn't. Middlesbrough perhaps, you know, maybe even Dublin or maybe a team in Scotland. You know, let's broaden the base, bring a number of teams in, you know, at that sort of level.
I think you're being romantic though, Martin.
No, I'm not being romantic, I'm being realistic, because if rugby league can't capitalise on the World Cup in that year, then it's just not really...
I agree.
Well equipped,
100% agree, and there has to be a legacy, but it comes back to money. There has to be enough. Well, there's no point putting a team in Middlesbrough, calling them the Middlesbrough Mavericks or whatever you want to call them.
Oh,
it'd be fantastic.
I'm just going to copyright that now. That's
a good name.
It'd be brilliant
if there were a team in Middlesbrough. I'm not doubting that. But there's no point sticking a team there and doing what we did with Oxford, where they don't have enough money to do it justice. There has to be money behind any club that is launching in a new place.
But the whole point is that you only find that out by going and seeking it.
And when we spoke to Ralph when we were at Saddleworth, he basically said he's got no problem in clubs in trying these things and the clubs failing.
No, because if you're trying it at the third tier and the club ultimately struggles to carry on, then that's not like a club in Super League falling over, is it? It doesn't matter that much.
The only criticism, I think, at that point is Oxford. If that licence failed, it should move to another place.
Yeah,
instead,
I think so.
Instead, it didn't, did it? It just
no, a bit like Hemel has with Ottawa.
I don't disagree with your point, Martin. But yeah. Money makes the world go round.
It does,
and we've got. There has to be significant investment because the other thing as well.
We have to draw people with money into the game.
Yeah,
we do.
The
point.
The other thing as well, of course, it's simple for me to say you need money because you've got to build your schools program. You've got to build an academy and yada 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 and all these things. Your community stuff.
But again, do you need money to do that, or do you need?
There needs to be some
plan.
You need a plan as well.
Yeah.
But it does come with cost. But the other thing with money, one of the big products, the biggest thing you can have at a club. Is a winning team.
That's what Andrew
was saying.
Yeah, but
not everybody can have a winning team.
No, they can't.
Matthew.
But you've
that's
got to give yourself as strong a chance as possible.
Yeah.
If you don't have a if Middlesbrough were to come in, I don't know why we keep saying Middlesbrough, but
who
Middlesbrough,
the Mavericks?
Yeah. You know, and they just finished bottom every year, and you know, would it work?
Mm. Who saw David Argyle coming?
Martin, I don't disagree with
who saw him on the horizon before?
We've got to find a way
before
to get
him before he turned up and. You know, so you never quite know when you're going to attract those people. But what you have to do, you have to go out and search for them and persuade them that rugby league is a game that A, they're going to enjoy being involved with, and B, that's going to give them value for money.
100% agree.
You know,
but you've got to get those people in place before you put a team in for me.
Oh gosh, yeah.
You know,
if you're
launching a new team. There's no point for me. There's no point at this stage putting them in unless there is enough backing to one, be competitive on the field, and two, be able to build your school's program to help launch junior clubs and so on and so forth. That's the only point I'm making. Mm. I agree with all your points, but I don't think we should chuck them in for the sake of it. I think we probably did with the old girls.
Well, I think it was disappointing for me that the old girls. Threw in the towel because I think they had the makings of a successful club there, and it was
that last season was the most successful they had, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Lee Greenwood,
but the crowds were still
exactly
the crowds weren't great, but
they didn't have the money to market it like
they didn't attract a money person to subsidise them.
Well, if Steve Gibson's listening, Middlesbrough Mavericks, it's yours if you want it. We're saying that
you can buy the license off me.
Right.
Excellent stuff. Well, that's nearly it for this week's Total Rugby League show. Just before we go, bit of housekeeping. Back chat was recorded today on Wednesday, and it's a good one.
A great show, yeah. There's Martin Vickers, the general manager in England of the Toronto Wolfpack. Very, very interesting. Really worth seeing. And if you get the chance to see it, do, because I think people will really enjoy that discussion.
We could have comfortably, me and Martin Sadler, sat with Martin Vickers and done an hour on it.
We
didn't.
We also have Tinerau Arona on the show, and he was talking about his injury and his blogging lifestyle and so on. It's very interesting as well. Really great guy. So, you know, well worth watching too.
And obviously Rugby League World's out this weekend as well, and Satan's Sinner. On the front cover there.
Regan Grace and Sean Long.
Yeah, and lots of other stuff in there as well.
Brilliant, yeah.
It's got
a bumper feature on the rise of rugby league in Africa.
I've got to say, I write a lot of the mag, but the things that I enjoy reading are the international stuff.
Mm.
Some of the copy that we get from all corners of the globe is amazing.
Rugby league in Africa could be tremendous, couldn't it?
Really could.
So many potential athletes in Africa that would really love rugby league, and so many so many players with African heritage playing both in this country and Australia now, and really making a name for themselves. That's really tremendous.
The key is taking hold in those countries as well. And that's what we go back to Jamaica last week and what's the great work that's being done there.
Yeah.
Just before you go, Marty, just a quick mention for League Express out on Monday as well.
Yes, loads of interesting things. All the best Challenge Cup semi-final coverage, of course. And, you know, the, our Rugby League Heroes series, which so many people really enjoy. And we've got the third and final part of a fascinating series written by Ernie Benbow, a Wigan fan, telling us about the real story of the disappearance of Central Park 20-odd years ago and the creation of what's now the DW Stadium.
There's going to be a very big piece in there, big story about the future growth and expansion of Rugby League.
Da, da, da.
Mm.
Or lack of.
Or potentially more.
I've got to keep you guessing.
Yeah.
There's no clues in this show, though, this week. This is all...
too early in a week, unfortunately, because if you give too much
I know you were semi-joking earlier. I'm just going back to the middle of the Mavericks, that's all. I'm just covering your back. There's nothing there in that. That was just you being flippant.
That was completely...
Right, okay, good. Excellent stuff. Member Steve Gibson. Right, okay, a big thank you then, Marty Sadler and Matthew Shaw for joining us, and also Lorraine Marsden and Andrew Fawn. And wherever you're going this week, make sure you have fun. Bye-bye.